John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
I guess the helicopter broke down or something. He'll be here any second. Good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard. It is the John Gambling Show. And while we wait on the mayor here just real briefly, you know that I have, here he comes right now. So I won't even bother getting involved with any and all of that. I was going to tell you about the solar industry going dark. But that's a story for another time. Not, you know, doing particularly well. Good morning, sir.
5 seconds late and you worked me over.
I try not to. I didn't know how long you were going to be.
I don't know.
The radar screen wasn't.
And I was downtown plenty of time, and I was just kibitzing with somebody, and then I looked at the clock and I said, "Oops,
I got to go kibitz with gambling."
All right.
Well, you're here, and glad that you are. As every Friday,
you ready for the Yankees Open?
I understand that you are going to be there.
I would not miss it.
And that I understand that you have some little friends that you're, or a friend you're going
to
bring.
Muppets. Oh, that's Muppets. A great segue from one to another.
Will Kermit have his Yankee cap? I hope.
I don't know. I'm going to take a look. He better have a Yankee and Mets cap on, because Kermit is going to represent the city. The Muppets, we've got to deal with Disney. The Muppets will be the family spokespeople for New York City, and it's all pushing tourism.
Sure.
This week we had, last week it was JetBlue that we cut a ribbon, new over in Long Island City, new headquarters for them. They brought in some people from Connecticut, moved here. A lot of new jobs for New York City, expanding the number of flights out of LaGuardia, and they're already the biggest, I think, at Kennedy. And then Delta, we did at LaGuardia, they're expanding, enormous number of new jobs, more flights in and out of New York City. And the three airports together handled something like 105 million people a year.
It's extraordinary.
We had 50.5 million tourists last year. We set a goal of 55 million tourists for 2015. Can we move that up? I hope so.
Yeah, that's what
you... But, you know, I mean, tourism isn't...
So the Muppets are going to be cutting commercials and doing stuff that will play around the country, around the world?
Yeah. I mean, the Muppets are fun, and it's kind of hard to have any complaints about the Muppets.
No, you certainly can't.
I have a Muppet character, whatever.
Mayor Bloomberg Muppet?
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. Eat your heart out.
I'm so impressed.
It's at home. Somebody actually borrowed it. I think they did or something. I walked in and I said, disappeared. What happened? I thought the Muppets left me, but they were only gone for a week or two.
All right. Well, have fun later on this afternoon up at Yankee Stadium, which I know you will. It has not been fun on the other side of the coin here with the four cop shot last weekend. You were down in D.C. Yesterday, I think it was.
Well, number one, there is not this, not a crime wave going on here. It is true. Eight cops were shot in the last couple of weeks. One guy shot four of them, and fortunately nobody was seriously hurt. You have to go back, it's probably 9 months to a year now, before Peter Fogoski, dedicated police officer with four daughters who I talked to, and I actually met him there at the Super Bowl. He was killed in the line of duty, putting his life on the line. And you just have to get constantly reminded that you and I would run away from danger. These people, like our firefighters and others, run in the other direction. They're out there putting their lives to protect us. The crime continues to come down the city. That's the good news. I was in Baltimore yesterday, and they have a new young mayor. She's really quite very smart, and I think will do a very good job there. Her father had been a Maryland elected official. But she and I were talking about crime. And in the end, you have to keep the streets safe. That's the number one thing. And particularly in New York, probably less so in Baltimore, you have to be have your eyes and ears open and do what it takes to try to prevent terrorism. And we've had 14 attempts since 9/11 for terrorist activities here. Everyone has fizzled or we stopped it. But, you know, you're, as somebody said, I think it was, might have been Ray Kelly, we have to be perfect every day. Terrorists have to be right only once. And that's a tough standard. But in any case, we are going after trying to get guns off the streets. And I was down the day before yesterday in Washington to do a press conference and talk about the Stand Your Ground laws, which half the countries in the city, in the country, half the states in the country have already adopted. It is really, if you think about it, about as bad a piece of legislation. It just is vigilantism. What it says is you can sit there with a gun, and anybody who walks by, if you don't like them, you just say, oh, I feel threatened, and you kill them. I mean, that's, and just doesn't have any place in civilized society. Can you imagine gangs starting, oh, I felt threatened? Yeah, you probably were threatened. You kill them, they kill you. You're in the middle of a battle.
Do you happen to know if that that scenario there with gangs, they have hidden behind Stand Your Ground? Have you heard
anything
about
that? I don't know, but the number of justifiable homicides, it would be called, has doubled, tripled, depending on where you are, gone up dramatically. And if you think about it, the people who really have to worry are undercover cops. Undercover cop tries to arrest you. You feel threatened. You don't know he's a police officer. You plug him. Now, police officers in uniform, police officers are generally in these laws, doesn't apply. But you don't know that an undercover
sure.
cop is a police officer. And I don't care about the prosecutions afterwards. I care about the fact that I want to keep the cop from getting shot. These are, once again, yeah, undercover cop's a tough job. It's really a dangerous job because they not only have the bad guys to worry about, they've got to worry about the good guys knowing who they are.
Yeah, misidentifying
and,
them.
Sure, and by definition, you're trying to fit in. Right. I one time went, we had a couple cops shot, undercover cops, and I went to their precinct to talk to the cops, and I went in the alley behind the police station to meet the undercover cops and to, you know, express my regrets to their buddies. And I just kept thinking to myself, it wasn't one of those people.
Did you have any hint?
Well, you know, they went from well-dressed business people to somebody that looks like a derelict. They went from big, tough guys to short, thin women who you'd think couldn't hurt a fly, but probably could kill you and me with one hand. They're so well trained. And that's exactly what you want. But if it just these stand your ground laws, it's plain and simple. It has nothing to do with the Second Amendment. They're all pushed by the NRA. The Florida law was literally written by the NRA. And it has nothing to do with the Second Amendment. It has nothing to do with hunters' rights. It has nothing to do with any of these things. It's just plain and simple. They think that everybody should be wired up. And then some reporter said to me, well, you know, what's wrong with that? Why don't we just, if you don't want to shoot him, put a bounty on him. Well, it happens to be against the law. Mm. But I'm just thinking where we've come, you know, this is America.
And I think it comes, I think it, you know better than I because you've talked with a lot more people about it, but I think it comes from the frustration that the bad guy, the one that is maybe going to be threatening me, I don't have any defense against that. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but I think that's where these laws get their momentum, that people, that citizens get frustrated that the criminal seems to have, you know, the upper hand.
Look, I can only speak with authority on New York City. We have a murder rate at an all-time low. All crime is at an all-time low. And you just, last night, I was at somebody's house for dinner, and this woman from out of the country, her husband was an ambassador, and we were talking. I said, you know, you can walk in any neighborhood in New York City during the day without looking over your shoulder. In most neighborhoods at night, as a couple I might not suggest, but... And she said that is inconceivable in her country, which is a very big country. But it's inconceivable in the rest of this, in the rest of America, in big cities. There's none. We forget just how safe we are here in New York City. What a great job the police department has done. You've got a great commissioner. It's good management. We've hired diverse group of very smart, dedicated police officers. They're equipped. They're trained. They work well with all the other agencies. I mean, the number of times we get together in multiple agencies to work on a problem, there's no, in this day and age, no one agency that deals with anything anymore.
Let me ask you this. Did you get any traction in Washington from those that make the laws, that make the rules?
Well, I don't know because you're just starting. But I think the fact of the matter is, and probably not because of us, because we just did this and who knows whether anybody listens to us, but there are... from some of the people I was talking to, they said that in a number of states, a lot of the legislators who had voted for this is saying, oops, That's not what we intended. And one of the speakers with me was a major in the U.S. Army. And he runs a big veterans organization. And he started to describe the rules of engagement for our soldiers.
Which are far more complicated than stand your ground, right?
He said if you did stand the ground, you would be instantly charged with at least manslaughter, maybe murder, and be court-martialed right away. He said they, and I said, yes, well, you know, if it's a civilian, I can understand. He said, no.
If it's the enemy.
We don't know who the person is. We live in a world, our soldiers, Marines, we fight in a world where they're, it's very hard to tell or even to define who's a civilian and who isn't. That's just, unfortunately, that we live in it. We don't have these big wars with tanks and
armies,
armies and lines and boundaries. This is you live and fight in the cities and in the towns and who knows. And he said, if they weren't ready to shoot at you, yes, you can shoot back. But the rules of engagement are exactly the reverse of what
you have
stand
to be
your
truly
ground.
Threatened
yes.
before you can do
yes.
it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that. That is a strange situation. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Let's take a break right here, Mr. Mayor, and when we come back, we will continue. 25 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning here on the John Gambling Show, teacher evaluations, letting parents know but nobody else.
Well, it's not really very practical.
That doesn't seem
right. I had originally thought about that and said, to myself, is that a compromise? Nobody's trying to embarrass anybody, but the question is, number one, the parents do have a right to know. They can move their child. It's not like you can pick your cop or pick your firefighter. The brass in those two agencies get the evaluations or whatever kind of evaluations they have that's appropriate to their job, and they make decisions, personnel decisions and all sorts of things, deployment decisions and what kind of materials and things you give to those police and fire to use, what kind of tools. But in the case of teachers, not only do the principals need to know, and that's assistant principals and superintendents, but parents, because they can choose their teacher, they can move their child to another school. And then you start thinking, you say, well, it's also true that if we are going to have improve the school system, the public who pays for all this has to have
a report card of their own.
A report card of their own. They want to move into a neighborhood or not move into a neighborhood. The safety statistics for police for crime and for fires and fire deaths and response times, that's there. If you want to look at that before you move into a neighborhood, why shouldn't you know about the school? And the school is really made up of lots of teachers and principals. And incidentally, somebody would start a website day one, right away, post your scores. And can you imagine, would you know that they're really posting it? I don't like that teacher. I'll put 10 fake scores.
You have no idea.
Or,
that's one of the issues.
My cousin, I'm going to help that teacher. I'll put in 10. You can't do that. For all the yelling and screaming, nobody likes to be judged, but that's the real world. You get judged with your ratings every week. I get judged every day in the paper. I pick up the paper and say, when you work for the public, it's the old story of you take the king's shilling, you become the king's man. Well, if you work for the public, that's your employer, and they want to know things.
So with that explanation and or position, there seems to be no other way to do this. I know the governor is wrestling with this and the legislature is wrestling with this other than to just make them public.
Well, my first thing is, if you want, I don't know what you want to do upstate. Maybe it's different in New York City. In New York City, we certainly feel very strongly that this information should be in the public. And I also think it's a bit naive to think that even the state law would be found constitutional that prohibits some of this information. Now, there are ways to do it. You don't have to put everything out and that sort of thing. But the firestorm and the obvious defense or the obvious reason you're against it, and then people will start to look in where you get your support.
You see, I've been maintaining on this question that by making the grades public, and this is not just student test score grades, but this is the entire evaluation grade, that you force the mediocre to get better and the poor to either get better or get out.
Yeah. I think it's Louisiana.
Because we're really talking about a narrow band of people.
Certainly, New Orleans has redone their whole school system because it was just wiped out in Katrina. But I think that I read someplace Louisiana just passed a law where they ended last in, first out. So the school systems really are starting to get better. You should be able to evaluate people on how well they do their job. If they can't do it well, give them help. If they still can't do it, the system cannot be run for them. It's got to be run for the people they serve. In the case of schools, it's the students. And regardless of how long you've been there, why should that matter? We are falling behind, John, in this country. America used to be in the top 5 or 10, whether you evaluated proficiency in math, science, cognitive skills.
All of that, by the way.
We're now down in the 40s.
All of that rating, that international rating, is based on scores. Right. It's test scores. So, I mean.
To say they teach the test is just, it's a slogan, it's catchy. But if the test is, can you read? That's exactly what they're supposed to do. If the test is, can you add and subtract and multiply and divide and know how to use numbers? Yes, of course I should be teaching to the test. And America is falling behind more and more compared to the rest of the world. If you stop and think, why does it take a two-income family today to live as well as a one-income family of 40 years ago? And if you take a look, the correlation between the need to have more hours worked to support the family, in other words, the efficiency or the productivity of people, has gone down. It's gone down right with our education system compared to everybody else. Now, part of it is that the rest of the world has now started to focus on education. There are great schools around the world, universities, high schools, junior high schools, kindergartens, whatever. So competitively, we had the field to ourselves, and now we no longer do. But that's the real world. And it's also true that a lot of our schools have fallen behind. I visited a school in Baltimore yesterday. You know, and it's a turnaround school, and they really are trying. And I talked to the teachers, a couple came from New York.
They got big problems in Baltimore, too. I mean, generic.
Every big city has problems. Sure. Some of them are bigger than others. But we just have to, long term, the solution is to make the schools serve the kids and do a better job. And that's just antithetical to the union's job. The union's job is to protect their members regardless of whether or not the public's happy with them. They want more money. That's understandable. They want better working conditions. That's understandable. They want fewer hours. That's understandable. But that's not to say that the government and the public should give it to them. They have every right to ask for it. In fact, I've always argued that a union leader, that is their job. It's not to improve the school system or to reduce crime or whatever. The union's job is to fight for its members. It's government's job and the public's job to know when to say yes and when to say no. You want to say yes a lot of times. You want well-paid, competent people. You want to attract the best and the brightest. But if they don't do the job, you just have to say enough.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let's take our half-hour break here, a little bit long. 8:32 is the time. Let's see here. I've got one line open, 800-321-0710. We'll get to you before we finish up here. Mayor Michael Bloomberg in studio for the living wage bill. Interesting development this week. You must have been aware that there was a waiver clause in the bill as written.
The bill has never been sent to us by the city council.
So you've never actually seen.
This is Chris Quinn writes with her staff, consulting with her members, writes a bill, talks to whoever she talks to, she depends on, and gets advice and talks to different interested parties. So they've not sent any bill to us. It's interesting if you think about it. The last time you really had a big managed economy was the USSR, and that didn't work out so well. You cannot stop the tides from coming in. We need jobs in the city. It would be great if all jobs in the city paid a lot of money and had great benefits for the workers, not good for the employers. But if you force that, you will just drive businesses out of the city. And we were lucky that Fresh Direct decided to stay here. But I don't know if it's true, but there's certainly a story is that everybody agreed that the city council said we won't pass the bill until you move in and we'll only make it prospective. But if it was going to keep Fresh Direct out, it's going to keep other people out. You just cannot force employers to pay a rate that doesn't isn't sustainable in their business. And it's not the government's business to do this. And, you know, there's another law for god-awful law that's going to try to force a mandate number of paid sick days. It's just not the government's business to do this. And no matter how much you try to carve out certain industries and certain locations and certain size businesses, you're going to hurt somebody. And we have done a good job of keeping New York City going in spite of the downturn in the country. We've done better, lost fewer jobs, recovered quicker. You know, I was in Baltimore. As I said, they desperately need jobs, and they have an enormous number of problems. And if we could help that city, we should help that city. It's another part of America. We're all Americans. But you just cannot start doing that. And I will veto any bill. And if the veto is overridden and there's enough people that have signed up on this bill, I'm told, so that they would be able to, assuming everybody stayed in line, veto the bill, we certainly will go to court and sue. Whether we win or not, you never know.
You heard, I'm sure, Chris Christie's, if not the actual words, but you heard the reports of his comments here in New York City at the George Bush Symposium about America, entitlement, couch potatoes. Where's the enthusiasm? Where's the drive? We're becoming sort of, I guess, lazy. You subscribe to that or not really?
Some people are lazy. Some people aren't. You know, it's. I think. It's right to look and see what problems we have, but it's wrong to blame those problems on others. This whipping boy of China. China's economy is slowing down, which is not good for America.
Yeah, well, I read this morning, 8.1% or something.
Because
growth.
That's a big market. And down the road, American manufacturing jobs are going to make stuff that we sell to China. Yes, we buy a lot from them, but we have to have, we need a good economy in China and in Europe because those are our markets. And we tend to blame others. Our school system, I talked about before, that I think is the reason productivity has gone down, why you have to work harder to maintain the same standard of living. This people talking about income and net worth disparities between the rich and the poor, it is really an education disparity between rich and poor. And you can tax and confiscate and throw people in jail and take everybody's resources away. But the basic problem is not income inequality. That is a result of an education inequality. And you've just got to do something to get everybody a good education. And that gets back to some of those conversations before. You know, last in, first out, and teacher evaluation, all these things go into, and it's not just in New York. New York's actually done a very good job. Arnie Duncan goes on and on about what a great job New York has done compared to other places. But our country, since everybody votes in the same election and for the national offices, and everybody pays taxes, and we need to have a good education system across this country. It is the number one thing. And while you're doing it, in the meantime, you have to have low crime because otherwise you can't go out in the streets and you don't have a tax base in order to pay teachers to educate our kids. But, you know, I don't know. I didn't hear what Governor Christie said. You know, we've got to focus on making things better. And to the extent he says, you know, some people lazy. Yeah, there are some people lazy. And then there's also some people, you know, we're still enormously productive in terms of inventing new things and creating industries and that sort of thing. The problem is other parts of the world are starting to get good as well. And unless we open our borders, those industries will be developed overseas. We want to bring them here.
Explain to me what's going on with the city and the city trade unions, electricians and the like that are controlled by the comptroller's office, I gather.
For reasons long lost in history, back in the 19th century, that's 18-something, just in case you can't figure out what the 19th century is, 3%, only 3% of the city's workforce had their wages set by the controller. why it was done. It was probably some backdoor political thing done in the dead of night. 97% of the city workers bargained collectively with the city. 3% for no logical reason whatsoever, the controller set these wages. Now, most people negotiate wages with their employers in the public and private sector. This order closes that loophole. And if you go back and look what the controllers have done, the last handful of controllers, they have set these wages 50% or 100% higher than the private sector. The 97% of our workforce, the municipal workforce, doesn't get this.
What's the process necessary to change it? Is it just an order from the mayor's office?
Why it was never done before, I don't know. I think part of the reason is, look, you have to have the controller sign off on a lot of things. So administrations are reticent to annoy the controller. You want to get along in small things. Why do we, these courtesy things you do all the time? People want recognition, respect. It doesn't hurt to have a cup of coffee with somebody, and so maybe nobody was willing to do that. But some of these awards have been so outrageous. Now, those outrageous awards are not getting rolled back. People already have it. We'd probably lose that in court if we tried, and we're not trying. But going forward, the city is going to negotiate with all of its
people. Has this
people,
been executed, this order?
It's a logical change. It applies to only new people going forward. And it's, when the letter actually gets signed, but essentially, yes.
But it's a fait accompli.
Yeah, and we're talking about 3%. And why should those 3% have a better deal than the 97%?
Seems to make some sense. 911 system report. Judge ordered you to release it.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, but there's an appeals process which we can't avail of ourselves, and we're talking about it. The truth of the matter here is a preliminary document that wasn't looked at, nobody had any chances to comment and that sort of thing. You can't release those things, because if you did, then nobody would ever write it anymore. It's like I said to the newspaper reporters, and of course they're afraid to put it in the paper. Well, maybe one did, I think. The first story that the reporter writes, no reputable newspaper would put in the paper that way. You have editors that work with it. You have fact checkers. You may have to talk to your lawyers. And then once you think that it's well done and fair and accurate in facts and in presentation, then you publish it. Well, it's the same thing here.
Does that mean that you don't think the 911 report, the preliminary that you have, is accurate?
It was just a bunch of stuff thrown together without any, if one consultant looks and says, I think that wall should be painted blue. Okay, let's talk to the people in the office and see what color they like. And incidentally, it's green because we got a special deal on green paint. And by the way, the psychiatrists say green is better for your psyche than blue or something or other. You don't just go out and publish it. We were surprised, I think, that we lost in court. It can't stand an appeals process, I wouldn't think.
Do you have a sense on when this might be appropriate?
There's a legal strategy we're working on.
To release the actual
report?
The
actual report we'll release. Yeah, we're working. It's almost done.
Okay. All right, good. All right, I'll tell you what we got.
And incidentally, this is all ginned up. It's a union issue. There is one union of call takers who doesn't like the fact that in the new system, which is working spectacularly well, response times continue to come down, deaths by fire continue to come down, ambulance response times are better than ever before, but the work has shifted from one union to another. Okay, and then the papers take it, and it's a story.
All right, well, we'll get the story when it is released. It's 11 minutes now before 9 o'clock. Before 9 o'clock, we got a whole bunch of folks on the phones. Let's get as many as we can. We're going to start with Carol. Carol, you've got the mayor. It's your turn. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Oh, thank you very much. I'm very happy that the crime rate has gone down. It's a priority, and you attribute that to police. Number one, what in particular do you think has been the most important thing the police have done, and how much does community participation play in that? And the other one is, I understand that domestic violence has gone up. I wonder how that compares with other cities.
Domestic violence, we have a big focus, as do the district attorneys, who are also very helpful. We have these centers where a domestic violence victim can come and not worry about somebody seeing them or the being retaliated against. Domestic violence victims a lot of times are some of the elderly, and they just, we think it's all young people. Elderly have are victims as well, and they really don't have any ways to get the message out or to know how to call a cop. The young women, they're worried about being thrown out of their house, how they're going to feed the kids, you know. So we've worked with the district attorneys and Yolanda Jimenez, who runs our domestic violence agent, anti-domestic violence agency, to give people the ability to report and then us to help them go to court and get orders of protection or get the families back together, whatever you can do. In terms of the crime rate, there's no one thing, Carol. The police department, we spend $8.5 billion a year. We have 55,000 people that work there, 1,000 devoted to counterterrorism and intelligence, 35,000 in uniform. It's well led. Commissioner Kelly is the right guy to lead this department, and all of the people going all the way down. It's very diverse, much more so than other cities. New York City's police department reflects the population almost to a percentage point. We focus our efforts on what we call problem places and problem people. So you devote your resources to where the crime is, not where there's political pressure to do something. Stop and frisk is one of those things, controversial, but it gets guns off the streets, and fewer guns means a lot less crime. Working with the district attorneys and, as you point out, working with the public. When the public says, I'm not going to take it anymore. And in this city, the public will not stand for crime going up, but they are willing to stand up and participate, to call, to report, to testify. And not everybody, but I think all of those things together. You know, a no-nonsense approach. We're not going to lose control of the streets here. And if anybody has any good ideas, people always criticizing. If you've got some ideas, give them to us. But policing is not social work. We do have problems with poverty and lack of education and lack of after-school programs and jobs and all those kinds of things. That's not the police department's job. The police department's job is, whatever the situation is, keep us safe. And they're doing that. You can walk, Carol, in any neighborhood in this city during the day without looking over your shoulder, and most neighborhoods at night. There's no other big city you could do that in.
All right, Carol, thank you very much. Let's go to Damien. Damien, you've got the mayor. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Good.
Mayor. You know, you guys are talking about the Stand Your Ground law, and, John, I overheard you say that, you know, can gang members use this law to, you know, as a reason to shoot someone? But isn't it true that, you know, we're kind of jumping the gun here, no pun intended, with this, and that, you know, what we should be focusing on is that there are a lot of law-abiding citizens who are carrying guns with a handgun permit. And if you focus just on those people, you know, I think the Stand Your Ground law might have some merit. You know, we shouldn't be talking about people who shouldn't be having guns to begin with.
Damien, I think we're running out of time, so let's move quickly. I think every state should set their own gun laws, and those laws should only apply within that state. That's traditional, although there's some people in Congress that want to make anybody be able to carry a gun any place in the country if they've got a license in one part of the country. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But the truth of the matter here is the basic problem with Stand Your Ground law is that you are jury, judge, executioner with no oversight. It is just not, you just can't give people the right to go out and say, I don't like that person, I feel threatened, bang. That's just not, you know, we can talk about licensing guns and who should have them and people threatened and that sort of thing. The good news is New York State's gun laws are very strict, and New York City, the murder rate is down to a record low. And our police department, which is very well led, to get back to Carol's thing, you know, the police department here is so well led. If you look at the number of cops who pull their guns out per capita and actually fire them in their whole careers. It is so much lower than any other city. It's just you think there's something wrong with the numbers. It's almost you have to when you plot these cities, you have to extend the chart just for New York. We have, you know, it just 10 a year times the cops fire the guns. It's hundreds in other cities of a fraction of our size. But the real answer, Damien, regardless of who's got the gun or not, is it's up to the government, to laws, to judges, to juries, with appeals processes to decide whether whether you have capital punishment. You just cannot let somebody go out there and say, I don't like that guy, bang.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's going to do it for us. As you pointed out, we are all but out of time. Thank you very much, sir, and I'll catch up with you in a couple of weeks.
Looking forward to it. Enjoy your... It's a vacation?
It is indeed.
It's not a working vacation.
No, it's not.
We'll enjoy.
Thank you very much. We've got to work ahead of us.